Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
Discover how ShareShare transformed trauma into triumph and how her Skirt Strong movement is rallying women around, rallying women worldwide to stand tall, speak out, and shatter the silence around abuse. From brokenness to breakthrough, ShareShare's Skirt Strong journey to end violence is the topic of today's conversation. Hey, everybody, I'm Lisa Mosby, your host with A Bit of Insight. And I want to first get our guest in here. Let's welcome my guest today. You know, she's on a mission to bring healing, hope, and awareness to those affected by domestic violence. She's actively building a movement that empowers women to break the silence and walk boldly in their strength. She's preparing for her annual Breaking the Silence event in October. This event is in collaboration with the city of North Lauderdale here in Florida. And my guest, ShareShare, is also expanding her outreach with intention to create future events in other cities and in her home country, Jamaica. She's continuing to mentor survivors, speak at community forums, and partner with organizations to drive awareness and change. ShareShare herself is a domestic violence survivor who founded Skirt Strong, Inc., which is a nonprofit dedicated to empowering women and raising awareness. She served as a spokesperson for Women in Distress for 2 years, and she is the author of Life After Brokenness. Her book, which is her testimony of how she has turned trauma into triumph, reminding others in the world that faith, resilience, and purpose can break any chain. Welcome, ShareShare. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. You know, your roots are in Kingston, Jamaica, and I want to start there. How did growing up in Kingston, Jamaica shape the resilience and sense of purpose that you carry with you today?
Well, living in Jamaica, because we have this laid-back attitude where Jamaica, no problem, man. You know, that's our motto, we have no problem. It's not that we do not have any problems, just we tend to approach our problems with a sense of humor behind it. Uh-huh. And growing up in Jamaica, you know, I was on the last of three children. And so I was pampered by my two sisters, older sisters and mom. And it shaped me to, I was an outspoken person in terms of, just wanting, as a travel agent, to be honest with you, I was a travel consultant for years, for over 30 years. So that helped me to bring people together. And I loved being a travel consultant because I was not only doing a job, it gave me the opportunity to speak to people. People come to purchase tickets and they're like, you know, I have this problem. I said, tell me about it.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. And just a quick mention, I got pregnant at the age of 16 and my child at 17. And within that time, I was going to this school, but my teacher, this guidance counselor, reached out to me one day and she said, you need to be a guidance counselor. I'm like, I'm just 17. She said, but you're always counseling people. I'm like, I didn't realize it. So I guess that's where it started from.
Yeah, we get formed during those early years, don't we? We formulate kind of who we are, our personality develops. And when you're surrounded by people who can support you and see that and kind of nurture you along in that direction, it's amazing the leg up that it gives you on life. It gives you a head start of everybody else because you discover what it is that you're good at. So that's such a great frame of reference if we think back to those times when we're kids. You know, we're talking about trauma today, specifically domestic abuse trauma. Was there a single turning point when you said, enough, I'm breaking free from this violence? Can you tell us about that day and maybe what happened when you stepped into your power?
I stepped into my power first at age 50. I got up at that morning, I'm like, I got a new attitude. I'm not taking nothing from nobody at this time. So that's where it started. I really got up. I'm like, I've had enough. Enough is enough. But then I really found my strength after my near-death experience, that last near-death experience with my abuser. And everything that I was told by him, I started reversing that in my mind. And it started by, for years, I would not file a restraining order because he always told me that, oh, a restraining order is just a piece of paper. I can get to you before the authorities do. And that kept me silent, really silent for a while. But the last event woke me up. When I thought about how my son, 17 at the time, could have come downstairs and find me just lying cold dead downstairs because I was held with a knife on my throat saying he was going to kill me. But I was able to escape that and got called authorities. So as soon as the police turned left, I got the strength to turn right and went straight to the courthouse and filed my restraining order. And that's where I started my breakthrough.
Yeah. And I think everybody has to have that defining moment where you just say enough is enough. And I like it when you use those words, enough is enough. Tomorrow's a new day and let's start it strong. And that brings me to your kind of your icon, your motto, skirt strong. I want to know the origin story of that. Why the skirt? And how does that symbol rally women to unite and stand tall against abuse?
Okay. So skirt strong came about when I was getting prepared for an empowerment conference, to speak at an empowerment conference for women in distress. And after laying out my suit of clothes, I go through like about 10 outfits, but I finally got to the final one. And as soon as I did that, I got a conviction in my spirit. And I heard it so clear. Lisa Weir says, now you've this now you know what you're wearing. I need you to remove the pants and put a skirt. I said, why? You know, I was talking about to the spirit. I'm like, why? And the Holy Spirit said to me, because you were not allowed to wear a skirt for over 10 years, because each time you put a skirt, and this is what he was reminding me of. And I look back, I'm like, oh my God. He said, each time you put a skirt on to go out, you're accused that you're going to commit adultery. I'm like, oh my God, that is true. So with that, going to that event, I didn't have a skirt, Lisa. So I had to go out and buy a skirt. That is so funny. I'm so sorry. I had to go out and buy a skirt. And after I bought the skirt, came back home, heading to the event, I was told again by the Holy Spirit, I need you to add what I just told you to the end of your speech. Lisa, I did. At the end of the speech, I said, oh, and let me just take this time to, since I know I was coming to a woman empowerment conference, I decided to empower myself. And this is how I did it. I did something that I've not done for over 10 years, and that is wearing a skirt. It was a group of over 300 people of all, and they were like, because I'm like, you're a woman, skirt. But then I said to them, what I mean by that is because I was not allowed to wear a skirt for over 10 years because my abuser believed that I was going out to commit adultery each time I put a skirt on. But here I am tonight standing strong in my skirt. And that, I mean, everything ended. The entire building was in uproar. And what the most I gathered from that, what was at the end of the event, I had women coming up to me and like, do you know I had a boyfriend who told me I could not wear red lipstick? Do you know? And just women just pouring in things that they were told, but they would never speak it out until I did. So that's a voice I'm trying to bring out of for women, yes.
Yeah, it's the resiliency and the word that you used, empowerment. You decided that to empower yourself. Well, we don't have to wait for permission. We don't have to wait for anybody else. It's our life. We get to take responsibility. We get to choose what it is for us that empowerment is going to look like, whether it's buying a skirt or wearing that red lipstick. It brings me back to your book where you talk about faith and resiliency. Like, how do you rebuild faith and resiliency within yourself? Because that gets broken down. Like when you're pushed down and put upon and physically, mentally, emotionally abused, it's hard to find faith.
Yes.
It's like, God, why are you letting this happen to me? And where does that resiliency come from for you to actually empower yourself to come back? So what my question is where do you, where, what would you say the top two or three practical steps to rebuild faith and resiliency come from? Where were your, what were your top two or three steps that got you there? Because there had to have been some self-talk happening, because it doesn't just happen. I know a lot of people who have been pushed down and it doesn't just happen. We stay stuck for a long time. I think you said that you were able to break out when you were 50. And so that's a long time under that rule. 10 years of not wearing a skirt. So I'll stop there. Two or three practical tips to encourage the women who are listening to step out of those situations.
With my faith, that's basically what kept me alive, my faith. Because there are nights when I wanted to sleep, but was afraid to sleep because I didn't know if this man was gonna kill me in my sleep because he would come in at the weirdest hours, 1, 2 o'clock, and just scream and carry on. And so I had to get to the point where I just throw my hands up and say, God, my life is in your hands. I am going to sleep. If I wake up, I thank you. If I don't, then we'll have a conversation on the other side. But so my faith, and then I have a lot of friends who I can always call when I'm not feeling it and not I'm just going through. I have two main friends. I can always pick up the phone and say, can you pray for me? Can you pray with me? You know, and I think encourage what I always tell women, try to get your circle. It doesn't have to be a big circle. As a matter of fact, the smaller your circle is, the better. But you want in that circle women who will fight for you. I always tell people this. You want people in that circle who will fight even God for you. And with that, you know that, okay, when you're not strong, they're there to lift you up. So encourage in people. I tend to encourage women to surround yourself with people who will help them, friends, family members who will be there for them through thick or thin. And that's what got me through the prayers of my friends and family and surrounding myself with people who I know will keep me accountable, plus the love of my children. Each time I get down, my children will come around and like, Mom, we love you. Mom, you got this. Mom, we're here for you. So those are the two main things, my faith, friends, and children. Well, three. Friends, my faith, friends, and my children.
Yeah, the circle that we create. And if you don't have the support in the current circle you have, find one, because there are people like you out there who are advocating for those folks who are trying to get out of these situations. During the last couple of years, you were working with women in distress. Were there any eye-opening lessons that you took away from that you're seeing caused systemic change where people are willing to take action and there's this systemic change that's starting to happen. The more that we speak out, the more that things start to change rather than living in silence all the time. That's why it's like break the silence. Tell us about that experience and what were your lessons from that, please.
Well, with women in distress, that's where my healing came from. Because each time I tell my story, and each time I tell my story, I always have one or two, most time more, but I always say, as long as I can impact one or two person, then I'm okay. So each time I speak, I always have someone coming up to me and said, thank you for speaking out because I went through this. I could never do what you're doing. You know, I could have never be able to talk about it, but thank you. Lisa, I remember this event that I spoke to on for women in distress, and one of the lady came up to me and she said, I'm so glad to hear you speak on it because I am currently going through it right now. You have just given me the strength and the hope, and I'm going home to make a change. That was my takeaway from all that.
Yeah, we have to speak up so people know there's hope after the fact. And then also giving them resources, which is what you've become, what you're growing with your event in October. You know, looking back at last year's event, what were the big wins from that? I know you partnered with the city of North Lauderdale and you're bringing in the community, you're bringing in politicians, you're bringing in powerful people who they are the ones, they're the lawmakers and things that can make changes around this. And you've been rallying and organizing this in October for the annual event. What wins did you have from last year? What change have you seen happen over the last 12 months? And then what's new on the horizon? Do you have some big goals for this year's event? What are you expecting to happen?
Okay. So the takeaway from last year's event is we had a question and answer section after. And we had, of course, on the panel, I had a BSO officer, Women in Distress CEO, and so forth. And not only that, I had two men, probably three men in the crowd at the time. And this young man stood up and he said, I want to talk about the abuse that I went through. Just listening to you all, I can, and you know, the entire room went silent. Because for a young man to stand up and tell about what he went through, and as he said, I was at the brink of taking my life. And something happened where I got a call as I was heading to where I was going to take my life. I got a call from this older man who told me that he had something for me to do. But I all believe it was a God intervention. But with that being said, I also had a woman in the room. She said she called over one of my teammates. She said, whatever you do, please do not put a camera on me. I'm literally in that space right now where I'm hiding from my abuser, but I wanted to be here. So and with women in distress, giving them the resource, know that hey, you do not have to say it. Here is a shelter. Here's somewhere you can go. Here's something you can do. So that was my big takeaway, that people understood that there was an escape route. And we explained to them that here are the signs. As long as you can recognize these signs, which is what we're here to do, to let you be aware of the signs, as soon as you recognize these signs, find even one person you can confide in. And start to take little piece of clothes, one suit today, your important paper. Just try to take little things at a time away from the house and give it to a friend or a family member to keep. So when that day comes and you plan your escape, you do not have to worry about trying to gather all these things. And that was a big takeaway that women was in awe with, yes.
Yeah, and you don't know when you're in the midst of it. You, I call it my brain goes into buffer mode. You know how when the computer just spins and you can't
Yep.
pull anything out of it? My brain starts buffering sometimes. And I think when women or even young men or, you know, anybody can be in a domestic violence situation, doesn't it crosses all boundaries. It crosses
Yes.
culture. It crosses race. It crosses sex. It doesn't matter if you are in that situation. Your brain gets into buffer mode and you can't think of what to do. You know, it's, for those of us on the outside of that, oh, it's so obvious. Why don't you just leave? Because there's so many things that your brain is thinking about. Like, how do I protect myself? What if they find me? They've threatened to kill me if I ever leave. There's all of this other baggage that comes with just leaving. Where do I go? How do I make money? How do I survive? Where do I live? All of those things. So the space that you've created in holding this and bringing community together to have these conversations and talk about it and bring awareness to it, the folks that show up, you know, many people don't know that they're there because they're trapped in those situations. They're just there learning, maybe not speaking up. But for those that do come forward, there it's a trickle down. Their stories are helping other people, giving them courage, giving them faith, giving them hope, all of those pieces. And I know that you've been doing this just in Florida, and your dream is to have a global vision of taking it to other communities, taking it back to Jamaica. What does that look like? Are you asking for other cities to partner with you? I mean, this is a platform where you could put that message out right now. What would you like to ask of other communities or organizations in helping you to spread this mission?
Funny that I about breaking the silence in the workplace. Monday morning, so for work, but I used to love Monday morning because it's my way of getting out of get escaping my home, you know. So by being able to bring this into the workplace, and as the title that I'm going to have behind this is The Hidden Battle Behind the Desk. And I really want to expound on this as much as I can so that people and employers and supervisors and managers can start being aware, you know, why is my employee not at work today? Why is she coming in late? What's up? Just bringing that awareness, not just to the survivor, but also to the managers, the supervisors, so that they can know that, hey, this is happening in our workplace. What can we do? Because you do have some of those men who actually go to the workplace to meet the women after they escape the home. And that's a sad part of it, because with domestic violence, once it's a trickle down, as he said. So here it is, you leave the home. Because now that you leave your home, you gotta leave the job, because that's the next place they're gonna go look for you. The job, so now you lost your job. And now you're like, okay, so now they're gonna go to my friends and family. So you try to stay away from your friends and family so that they don't find you there. It's just a trickling, it just trickle downs. And the sad part of it, what I realized, Lisa, is that a lot of women actually go back, because at the end of the day, they realize, I don't have nowhere to live. I do not have an income. So let me go back. And that's a sad part of it, because most time they don't make it back out alive. I hate to say it. So with this upcoming event, I'm having an awesome panel for October, an awesome panel where I have two dynamic men going to be on there. And I'm bringing in people from professionals, from kids in distress, because we also want to hear about it from the kids' point of view.
Yeah.
Children who watch their parents go through this. You know, so I'm building a panel where it will come across, you'll hear about domestic violence from every aspect of life, from the male point of view, from the mental point of view, from a child's point of view, from a community leader point of view, from the BSO, the police point of view, just bring it all together, plus from survivors. So hopefully with all of this, I'm here because we need help of every kind. Volunteers to put everything together. We need sponsorship to get all the work that we're doing together, the material, the program, the flyers. I mean, sponsorship in cash or kind. It's just a wide cross era. We are open to any and everything and everyone.
So you're fueling the mission, but where do people make these donations? How do they reach out? How do they get in touch with you if this is something that they want to participate in and in any way, whether it's volunteering or financing or something else? How do they find
so,
you?
My email address is Skirt Strong 23. I got it from Sounds 23. So Skirt Strong 23 at gmail.com. And the phone number is 754-299-2188. And I also have Facebook, Skirt Strong Inc. on Facebook and on Instagram. And for any other, as I said, you can reach me at that phone number for any other contacts. For donations, just I'll tell you.
Yeah, and all that information will be in the show notes too. So if you didn't get off the audio, I know many of you are listening on your phone, and you can pause and go back, rewind, and write it down if you have access to the show notes, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, wherever we are aired. You can also look at the show notes and you'll find it in there. We've talked a lot about the organization, your personal experience. Let's dip into mentoring survivors. Could you walk us through maybe how do you guide women from crisis to competence? Because that's something that's heavy on your heart. And I know you've shared some stories with me. What does that look like? You know, can we give hope to these women who are out there? There is mentoring available. And what would it look like if they wanted to seek that out?
Yes, there's mentoring available. You can always reach out to me via my email, phone number. And as I always tell people, my phone does not have a clock. So if you have to call me at 1 o'clock in the morning, please do. Because if you do call me at 1 o'clock, it's because you have a need. And I promise you, I'll be there. My promise with Skirt Strong is you might be trying to escape. You might not know how, but you just might want to get out. And I promise you, you have my number. If you call me and you said, I want to leave, but I don't have a ride, tell me where you're at. I'll grab a company and we'll come get you. And we will take you to a safe place. Women in distress is always a good place to start. 211 is a good place to start as well. If you are really in dire need, you can always dial 211 and they will give you the source and the resource for women in distress and other places where you can go for shelter.
Yeah, I didn't know that about 211. Thank you. How is spirituality and counseling kind of intersected for you when you're mentoring survivors? You know, how important is that for long-term recovery? I want you to speak to that because you talked about your faith and that's what really got you through all of that tough stuff. Some of these women may not have a Bible. They may not have faith. And so, you know, how do they start to maybe do that in secret, you know, in the closet sometime? How important is it to the recovery and how do they get started in getting a deeper connection through with faith?
Your faith, you need your faith because that's what's going to bring us out. I'll give you an example. For my book, Life After Brokenness, I remember after my abuser left the house, I got up one morning around 3 o'clock, which is the time I get up to do my devotion, because I always tell people when I'm mentoring them, just try to get an intimate connection. I said, if I'm cooking, I'm like, okay, God, come on, we're going to cook. We are going to cook. So you're going to add your flavor. I'm going to work. I'm like, okay, Daddy God, we're going to hit the road. You got to be my guy. Try to incorporate him in everything you do. And you're surprised to know how it becomes easy after a while. The book titled Life of the Brokenness, I got up this morning in question and I said, okay, God, I know you're a strategic God. I know you do not do things without a purpose. So why did you have me go through this for so long? I said, as a matter of fact, don't answer that. My question is, what do you want me to do with all this experience that I just went through for 28 years? And he said to me, right. I'm like, who? He said, right. I said, right what? He said, a book. I literally laughed. I said, a book? Me? I said, okay, I'll do so under one condition. You will have to give me the title for the book. And I left it like that. 2 weeks after, I was just in my kitchen minding my own business and I heard it so clear. Life After Brokenness. I'm like, what is that? He said, you promised me if I gave you the title, you'd write the book. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how the title of Life of the Brokenness came about. And I just want women to know that you do not have to pray no long, deep prayer. You just have to whisper in your heart, God help me. That's all you have to say when you're in dire need. I promise you, he will hear you. That's all you have to say, God help me. And if you want to be a little deeper, you can add to it. God help me out of this situation. God, what do I do now? Lisa, I remember each night my ex used to come in just at 1 o'clock and make all this noise and curse and carry on. So I get to the point where every night when I look at the clock, when I know he's going to be coming home shortly, this is my prayer. I said, Father God, as soon as he puts his foot over the threshold of this house, I want you to sit him down. And wherever he sits down, let him fall asleep right there. Lisa, I'll tell you this. Every morning, I tell you no lie, I'll come downstairs and see him sound asleep at 6 o'clock in the morning, just like this. Knock out. Knock out, because God heard and answered my prayer. And I promise you, ladies that are listening, he will. You don't just come straight from your heart. You don't, it's no long prayer, no certain words you have to pray. Just pray from your heart. One word, two words is all you need. I promise you, he'll hear you.
And it will give you the courage. You know, it will give you the courage to either keep going or find a way out or ask somebody for help. And
yes.
That's all we're providing that space for you today. And we're hopefully encouraging some of those who are experiencing this. But I also want to make another call for courage. And that is, if there's somebody in our audience who is a witness to this, who sees it happening, whether you're in a workspace and you see it, or you're, you know, it's somebody in your friend circle, your family circle, are there, let's say, three tangible things that those folks could do to stand up for or stand with survivors of domestic abuse? What can we do as those that are witnessing it?
I always think that. So my first thing is try to be that friend. Try to be that ear. Believe them. Because sometimes people tell us, can you believe this? And we're like, that's not happening to you. You know, but believe them and try to be that shoulder for them. Let me help you. Let me be your voice. Because sometimes we have to be the voice for the voiceless until they find their voice. And but be that confident is the most important thing.
Okay.
Being a confident, let someone know that you can come to me, you can share what's going on. And I would be your confidant. I'll hold it until you tell me otherwise.
Perfect. Any final thoughts? Any last things that you want to make sure that we share with the audience today, whether it's for those who are victims or victors, or those who are in support of people who are experiencing this? Final messages.
Final messages. I just want you to know that do not let your situation define who you are. Do not let your abuser win. That's why I want you to break the silence, because once you can break, because that's where our abuser hold us. They keep us quiet. So once you can find your voice to speak to one, if just one person, as I keep saying, that confident, then you're breaking your silence. And just know that there's hope. You can heal. There are resources out there for you. There are shelters out there for you if you come to that. But there are people who will undergird you and believe you and keep the faith. Keep the faith.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being with me today. Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.